Everyone drinking tonight? Anyone drinking tonight?
No, I have a headache.
Drinking
Arriba Grande.
Oh.
Mexican spiced coffee stout.
Oh.
What does that mean? Good. Big get up?
I guess.
I'm drinking it in my machine head.
I've got a. I just found this beer. Craft beer.
Crap. I mean, craft beer.
Hey, if you buy 24 at Walmart, it's only $18. That's value.
Yeah.
That'll last me several days.
It's the same price as some bombers of craft beer.
Some
bombers.
A bomber.
Big, like 750 milliliter.
That's too expensive.
Yeah. It is kind of expensive.
I had a Dogfish Head before this.
Beer is expensive.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite brand, I think.
Dogfish Head.
Yeah.
I like the people who make New Belgium. Pretty much everything I've had from New Belgium is excellent.
They're good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All
right, I'm sharing my screen.
Shit, we're going.
Well.
I won't mention that folder.
No, you can't do that. That'd be predictable and boring.
Redundant.
Joke is like, old now.
I did that already, man. Shut up.
When a form of music that our children like becomes linked with ghoulish images and violent theatrics, it demands our attention. Hundreds of thousands of teenagers are locked onto so-called heavy metal music.
I grew up metalhead. I love 80s. Yeah! 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 80s metal, like Metallica. Yeah! Yeah! Yeah!
What do you call this? Well, this piece is called I Lick My Love Pump.
It's gonna be abrasive, it's gonna be sickening, it's gonna be hard to listen to, it's gonna be aggressive, and it's gonna fucking kick you in the fucking balls with a pussy.
The new number two.
Because it's episode number two.
Ha, I get it.
I get it.
I get jokes.
I'm clever.
Yeah.
So inside.
Well, if you're a metalhead and you listen to
that, should be very obvious.
Iron Maiden,
or you
better
like
know
old
that.
BBC programs,
you best know that shit, man. So, welcome back. If you were listening before, and if you haven't listened before, welcome.
Yes,
just say welcome.
I guess I could do that.
You should say, "Hey, guys."
Damn it. I always forget that. Hey, guys.
Episode two.
Yeah, episode two.
All right.
So what's going on? What are we doing?
Well, as we talked about last time, this is a kind of a series of episodes, which is, you know, a retrospective on 1988. And this episode's going to primarily focus on one band, just because this album... As a collective, we thought this album was pretty high on the list of albums from 1988. So it's definitely top five.
Yeah.
So the album is Danzig by Danzig.
Yes, the debut album from Danzig.
The debut album from Danzig.
Yeah.
Released on August 30th, it was a summer album. Peaked at 125 on the charts. At the time, in 1988, it peaked at 125 charts.
What charts are these?
The Billboard charts.
Like,
you know, the top 100, man.
They didn't have one for metal, right?
No, it was just music in general. Yeah. Just any music. Yeah. And they were, you know, they got to 125. I'm sure they felt very special. I'm sure that's what they were going for, too, to make sure they got as high on the charts as they possibly could. But if we're talking about the charts, we may as well talk about the song Mother, which is obviously the most famous, most popular song from that album.
Yeah, no doubt.
Before you do that,
yeah,
who was in the band?
Well, Glenn Danzig was the singer,
obviously.
The guitar player was John Christ from Maryland, which is kind of interesting since we're Northern Virginia guys.
Yeah,
Erie Vaughn, bass player, who was also in Samhain.
Yep.
Glenn Danzig's previous band. And Chuck Biscuits.
He was in Black Flag.
Yep.
He's the drummer.
The drummer. Yep.
And I found a picture of them in the recording studio. And it was from the when they were recording this album. And I swear to God, Chuck Biscuits looks like that Superman, Super Caveman guy from the Looney Tunes cartoons.
Oh my God.
He's weird looking. Sorry, Chuck Biscuits, if you're listening. Kind of a weird looking dude.
I did some Wikipedia research on the whole Rick Rubin
connection. Which is the lowest form of research.
It is. It is.
Colleges don't even let you say that.
This appears to be true, though. I'd buy this. Rick Rubin was scouting for potential bands to sign.
And, Rick Rubin, who was the producer.
The producer, yeah. Rubin wanted to create a supergroup with Danzig as the singer.
Huh.
Yeah. And Danzig said, no, I have to have Erie Vaughn. He's in Samhain. I want him as the bassist. And then Danzig added John Christ and then recruited Chuck Biscuits.
That's cool. I did notice that I was when I was anytime we know we're going to talk about these bands, I go back and kind of research the, you know, their history.
Yeah.
I was listening to a lot of Samhain and
Misfits
the last couple of weeks. And I noticed when I was listening to, I think it was the last Samhain album, there's three or four songs that John Christ plays guitar on.
Yeah. And actually the second half of this story is that this was supposed to be a Samhain album.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Ruben said that. The Samhain thing, I don't know. Just call it Danzig. So this is sort of a Samhain album in a way. And if you listen to November Coming Fire, which is the album that came out before this one, you can sort of hear that.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's this progression. You can definitely.
Oh yeah, there's sure. Definitely songs on November Coming Fire that could have easily been Danzig songs.
Yeah.
November Coming Fire is actually one of James Hetfield's top 10 albums of all time.
Oh wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't find this anywhere, but I remember when this album came out, I was reading a magazine, and this is kind of weird, but they said that Rick Rubin said that the intention was to create an album that would be sort of timeless, that people would go back to and listen to over and over the years, which I thought was very ambitious.
Yeah, that is.
And I think when bands say that, because I've heard other bands say that, when they do that, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be our greatest album ever. And then it's like,
putting way too much pressure on themselves.
Yeah. So
I wonder if Rick Rubin told Danzig that.
I don't know.
You have to make this album timeless.
Yeah.
This is going to be a masterpiece.
Yeah, I don't
know. You better do it right.
But, I mean, for the most part, I think they were successful. I mean, it is it's one of Danzig's best albums, and there's songs on here that are still played, you know, like Mother's played in stadiums today. So,
yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of crazy that they were, you know, that confident about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, speaking about Mother. You know, as I mentioned before, the album itself came out in 88, really chart. I'm sure it did well for him well enough.
Yeah.
But then in 93, he released, this album called Thrall.
Yeah.
Demon Sweat Live.
That's right.
and it contained, I think like two new songs.
EP.
Yeah. It was an EP. Yeah. I think was it two new songs and a cover?
Three. Yeah. Well, two in a cover. Two,
yeah.
Three studio songs.
Yeah. And then like three live songs, four live songs.
It was four. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of them was called, and it was labeled Mother 93, which
yeah,
I don't know
right.
why it was labeled Mother 93. I mean, it's not like it was any different except the added crowd noise.
Yeah. It was supposed to be live and it clearly was not.
No.
Like, what's going on?
Wait, the one on the album was not live? I thought the video was not, it was the real recording with
maybe that's
the
what
crowd
it was.
Put over it.
I thought the album was too.
I
have to look that
I think
up.
On the album it was actually.
Was it well, live? I don't know. I'll have to find that out. But
anyway, you're right though. The video they had like crowd footage, and at the end he's like, "Thank you," and you hear the crowd screaming.
Yeah.
And I guess we can credit MTV for that, because that song blew up.
Oh yeah,
because of that video. I clearly remember, I mean, it was kind of weird because, you know, we were into Danzig from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember seeing the video for Twist of Cain and loving, I mean, I was blown away. I loved it. But, you know, it was like 93, 94. I was in high school and I remember being in my English class. It was like third period and I was wearing a Danzig hat at the time. And one of the football players walks over to me. This never happens. Like, a football player is coming to talk to me about something. I was like, well, shit, what did I do? Who did I insult? What now?
Like, you were smaller than them.
That's a good point.
No, I was definitely not.
You could have stood up.
I think you would have been okay.
Yeah.
Well, luckily, that's what it was about. Yeah. He just saw my hat and he's like, dude, Danzig, I love that song, Mother. I'm like, yep. Yeah, it's a good song.
Yeah, because when the album came out, it was just another song on the album in 88.
Right.
It was a good song. And it was a,
and there was a video.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, the video was great, too. Yeah. I remember the uncensored video, too.
Yeah, with the chicken and the blood and everything.
Well, I mean, to the guy's credit, he did ask me what other albums, you know, what other songs they have and what's their best album. So he actually was interested. So
okay. Don't judge him just because you thought he was a jock. There's crossover there, you know.
There was plenty of that, yeah. But I was a 17-year-old and it was.
I just listened to 5 seconds of the version that's on Thrall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's definitely live.
Okay, good.
It's from that show. It was a Halloween show, I believe, of that year, right?
Okay.
Or the year before.
Thanks for doing the research live. We appreciate that. So the other thing about Mother and the fact that it came out in 88 but got popular 6 years later.
Yeah.
I actually asked Glenn Danzig about this. We saw them with, I think it was with Prong. It was Danzig and Prong. Because we met Tommy Victor afterwards and then
that same
night.
Yeah, that's right. It was with Prong.
The guys with Danzig, I do have to say, the guys with Danzig, I guess his management or bodyguards, they were assholes.
Oh,
man.
Yeah.
I was still filming Eri Von, and the guy standing next to Eri Von's like, don't you be selling that tape now, man. Don't you be selling that tape, man. Don't you sell that tape. I was like, okay.
He doesn't have any right to say that anyway.
Right. And then I don't know if it was the same guy or not, but I'm waiting to talk to Glenn Danzig. He's just sitting in his limo, and I'm waiting in line. And every 2 minutes, the guy's like, "Don't sell that tape, man. You gonna sell that tape?" So
was it to him anyway? It's a public place,
right? Who cares? But I finally get up to Danzig and I ask him, you know, did it piss you off that Mother became popular 6 years later? And he's like, "Heck no, man. What would you rather have, man?
Are you going to sell that tape?
Fucking awesome. Good.
All right. Hey. Did it kind of piss you off when Mother came all popular and shit when it's been out for 6 years already?
Heck no.
But I mean, you know.
Better late than never, man. What would you rather have?
I know, but, you know. Like, can I get Chuck the Sun?
Hey, Whelan was out there, man.
What?
Whelan was at the show.
No, he's not.
I wish he was.
Kick his ass. Stealing our fucking song.
And then he goes on this diatribe about Stone Temple Pilots ripping off his riff, which that's kind of ironic.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we could start by talking about the songs sequentially if you want there.
Right. That's a good place to start going into because that first song.
He's obviously talking about Twist of Cain, the first song on the album.
Yep.
It's got a riff that you could make an argument that Sex Type Thing by Stone Temple Pilots, they sound similar.
Yeah.
But I've always maintained that Glenn Danzig stole that riff from Led Zeppelin and In My Time of Dying.
Yep.
You know, all three are good songs.
Yeah.
So it worked out for everyone, in my opinion. But
yeah.
Well, before we go into the songs, I did want to talk a little bit more about the history of you know, where Danzig came from. And I'm just curious if you were a fan of punk in, like, you know, 82 and, you know, you're listening to Ramones and you're listening to Misfits and you're like, man, the Misfits, they're great. They're awesome. They got, like, this, you know, horror vibe going on. Yeah. And, you know, it's really different. I love it. And then Glenn, you know, disbands the Misfits and turns into Samhain, which became kind of it was pretty much a Danzig Misfits hybrid.
Yeah.
Some of the songs carried over.
Yeah.
Halloween. There were songs on both. Yeah. All Hell Breaks Loose was on.
Yeah.
It was a Misfits song and a Samhain song.
Yeah. Yeah. He did that a lot.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was just curious how punk fans took to Danzig.
So call in now, punk fans.
Danzig sucked.
Or tell us how you're, you know, tell us on social media. I'll put a post up after this and
Think they probably didn't like Danzig as much.
Yeah, I mean that's what common sense would say, right? And if they're punk fans, they're not going to get into Danzig because Danzig was more hard rock, bluesy metal type stuff.
So that leads me to this discussion about, I mean, you said they're a bluesy rock band, hard rock band, because I don't think Danzig's really, at least the first, three albums probably, they're not metal.
No.
I mean, they never really were.
They have metal.
I don't know. I think.
They're heavy.
Yeah.
There's songs that are definitely metal.
Yeah.
There are songs on 2 and 3 that are definitely metal. Like Left Hand Black is a metal song. and there are elements that they pull from metal.
Yeah.
But at the same time, on each album, there's something that's like Danzig 2, there's so much bluesy stuff on that album, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he pulls elements from all different genres, which I love.
Yeah.
I think it's great. Well, all different rock genres. It's not like he's doing rap.
No, and it was never like you thought, well, I only like this guy because he was in the Misfits. It's like these are songs I really enjoy. They're pretty kick-ass heavy rock songs, but they're not even they're not thrash, certainly.
No.
They're not even really up-tempo.
I think lyrically they're more metal.
Because he's singing about the devil.
Yeah.
So he's got that part in common.
Yeah, there's devil and devil stuff. There's murder. There's, you know, violence. Yes. There's all this stuff that's very, very metal. So.
Yeah. It's just stylistically, they don't really fit with, we talk about our lists.
No.
They're the most out there.
But they could tour with Slayer and people will be happy.
Right.
It's kind of interesting.
I know. Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At no point was there like, you guys don't belong.
No, not at all.
It fit right in, but it also was totally different.
Yeah.
From everything else we were listening to.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting because we 88, we're definitely into some heavy stuff. And that first Danzig album, it may have even helped me get into some other bands only because it was so different from most of the metal we were listening to. You know, it was more bluesy. There's still some heavy stuff on there, but a lot of the album is very kind of not metal, like you're saying. I think he benefited from having Rick Rubin because I think songwriting wise, it's a lot better than anything he'd ever done.
Yeah, you can tell there's some production value going on, especially
there's focus in the songs too.
Yeah,
exactly. And there's elements in there that you hear that you didn't hear in Sam Hain and Misfits songs. Sam Hain is so sloppy. Like their stuff is just a mess.
I think it's probably Ruben, you know, focused the band and said, you need to shorten this song up, tighten it up.
Yeah.
Stick with, you know, X number of riffs.
Yeah.
And they benefited a lot from that.
Yeah. And those albums with that lineup, that's an example of a lineup that really works very well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about the playing of the music, the musicians?
Sure.
Yeah.
Because it's always weird to me listening to Danzig because as a bass player, Gary Vaughan, and he admitted in one of the interviews, he's like, I don't practice bass. I don't care.
What does he practice? Ukulele?
I'm paraphrasing. So yeah, he doesn't go for it at all.
Yeah. A lot of those songs are just one note. Do, 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 do.
But you know what? It's weird because a lot of times it really works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just hitting that same, like in Mother, he stays on the B during the verses.
But I mean, the songs themselves are all fairly simple. I mean, well, structurally.
That's true. But then you contrast him with John Christ and Chuck Biscuits, who are just insane, awesome musicians, it's almost like, it's almost better that he was in the band
to
just do the most basic bass playing.
Yeah.
I think it helps highlight those two more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and seeing Chuck Biscuits live, and if anybody's ever seen Chuck Biscuits live.
Crazy. I don't think you could see his face ever.
Yeah.
Like, you never know what he looks like. His whole body is moving in all directions.
If there was a living embodiment of Animal from the Muppets, it'd be Chuck Biscuits.
And John Christ, I mean, guitar-wise, what's funny is I'll tell this quick story about meeting him. Yeah. Meeting him. You know, obviously, if you've ever heard a lot of Danzig songs, they have these great artificial harmonics, these what they're called pinch harmonics, right? And I had taken guitar lessons, and I learned about harmonics, and I just called them pinches. Like, I'm going to do a pinch here when I'm playing this riff. I'm going to do a little pinch here. That's what I called them. So,
well, that's because you pinch the string.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, it's, I don't want to get into the details of how you do it, but yeah.
Well, it sounds
that's
weird
for another podcast. That's for our tech talk just, podcast.
Oh, I'm not in that podcast.
I'm not either. Well, so I met
guitar
him.
Guitar shop.
Yeah. Exactly. Eric's guitar shop.
Nobody's done that. Fun with
that. Yeah, right. So I met him, and I'm a little nervous because, you know, I, as a guitar player, I looked up to him. He was really good, one of my favorites at the time.
He had massive upper body strength.
Yeah. That was like a requirement of that band, wasn't it? He had to work out.
Chuck Biscuits was pretty pudgy.
He's behind the drums.
I think Irvine was kind of skinny.
Chuck Biscuits ate lots of cereal. So
it could all kick my ass.
Yeah.
So anyway, I meet John Christ, and the first thing I tell him is, I love your pinches.
He's like, what?
He looks at me like, excuse me? Like, I think he actually said, what? Your pinches. I like them. He's like, what? And finally, I was like, pinch harmonics. I like your artificial harmonics. I like those.
Yeah, that's what you said.
He was like, oh, yeah, thanks, man. I like your pinches.
Yeah, it was awkward from there. it was kind of no recovering from that.
Yeah.
Just sign this. I'm going to walk away now.
Yeah, thanks, man. Got to go. Keep up those pinches. We mentioned how Rick Rubin, you know, they benefited from having Rick Rubin as a producer songwriting-wise, but the production of the album, Danzig itself,
it's pretty dry.
Good.
It's not terrible. No, it's not terrible.
You could hear everything.
Yeah.
It's not terrible, but I wrote this down. I don't know if it's true or not, because I did listen to a lot of Danzig this week, and Danzig 2 and Danzig 4 are really, really good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But Danzig 1, if the production was better, it could be my favorite Danzig album, just because of the songs themselves, I think.
Sure.
Because, you know, there's songs in there that were these heavy guitar riffs, but it doesn't come through because the guitar sounds like it was recorded through a tin can.
Yeah.
It's like, what is that? But
yeah, it's very... it's that there's a hollowness to the guitar. The bass is, there's no tone to the bass.
Yeah. It's so flat.
Or treble, just, I should say. And the drums also, there's no treble on those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just very, very dry and flat.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I love these songs. I love pretty much every song on this album. Yeah. It's great.
It's a solid album for sure.
There could have been more pinches too.
You're right about that.
Awesome.
The other thing I noticed about the production was, and I, you know, this is a, I think it's a Rick Rubin thing, but a lot of the songs, the guitar solo was in one channel.
Yeah.
Which I thought was weird.
Yeah.
I always thought that was weird.
It is weird.
It is weird. Also, sometimes the hi-hat gets really, really loud, and it's also only in one channel sometimes.
That's weird.
Really?
Yes.
See, that I didn't notice.
Yeah, I was listening with headphones on, and every now and then the hi-hat gets really loud, like if it's open, and it's only in like the left channel. Just randomly. I don't think that's maybe on purpose. It just sort of happens. I don't know why. It's just weird.
It's odd.
The a lot of times I felt like the instruments all sounded like they were synthesized. I don't know if it was overproduced or I don't know what they did.
I don't know.
There's just a not live, not... It didn't sound like... This is a terrible description. It didn't sound like the future albums, you know?
I agree. I mean, there's...
If you saw them live, Danzig 2 through 4, that's what they sounded like.
Yeah.
I can't imagine they sounded like they do on the first album live.
No.
I don't know how they would do that.
Well, yeah, I mean, you compare the sound on Danzig 2. Open, you know, start Danzig 2 from the first track and listen to that guitar tone.
Yeah.
It is drastically different than the guitar tone of Danzig 1. I mean... Clearly, they knew that the guitar sound was not good on Danzig 1.
Yeah, and I had a live recording from this tour that was on the radio. It didn't sound like the album.
Wow.
So
it's really interesting. Why do you think they did that? That's weird. Like, why would they, if they knew they had a sound, I wonder if Rick Rubin had something to do with that too.
I'm sure.
I don't know.
It's, you know,
back when he was more involved in records, making records.
But also back then, there was a lot of
tweet him, ask him.
Yeah, ask him. A lot of producers had a
probably.
I guess he didn't really have this, but a lot of producers had a certain sound where you knew who produced the album because you just could tell the sound of the album. It was like, that's a Terry Date album.
Sure.
That's, you know.
Well, I meant to ask you this, Tim. Do you know, because I remember South of Heaven by Slayer had the same thing with the guitar solo in one channel.
Yeah.
Well, I have a guess. You know, they had two soloists on that in that band.
That's true.
That's
I could see where you say, well, you're going to be on the left and you're going to be on the right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah.
When you have one guitar player, that doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. I mean, that using the stereo aspect, it's kind of a throwback. You know, using left and right channels, like, ooh, look how cool this is. We can play with stereo aspects.
So but I remember there were times when I had these cheap headphones and I was listening to my Walkman and one channel blew out.
Yeah.
And so I would listen to the album going, guess the solo's supposed to be here.
Yeah. Right. But it's kind of neat. It's like, hey, this is a remix.
I guess.
It's a new version.
I guess you could call it that.
Yeah.
Well, I never noticed the rhythm guitar doing that during the solo. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, but I didn't want it to sound like that. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Make the guitar in both channels, dude. It's not that hard.
Yeah, that was a producer choice, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's trying to be cool.
Well, so you want to go down through
the
songs?
Yeah.
Talk about each one. We kind of already talked about Twisted Cane, but I do remember seeing that video.
Yeah.
I think that was our introduction to Danzig, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't know who Kane was.
No.
And then there was an interview on Headbangers Ball, and Danzig was all weird. He was all like hunched over and very shy and quiet. Mm-hmm. Like, what's that song about? He's like, well, it's about the first murder ever recorded in history. It's Cain and Abel. I'm like, wow. I didn't know that. Yeah, that's what it's about.
That's like just his opinion, man.
Yeah. So, like, oh, okay. That's who Cain is. I didn't know that. And I went to Sunday school, too. I should have known that.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe I just.
Even I knew that.
Yeah.
I didn't.
I paid much attention in Sunday school.
Why would you?
Yeah. I don't think I did either. How about that?
Or maybe they didn't teach that to, you know, 5 year olds.
Well, that's a good point.
Let's talk about Cain and Abel, kids.
Today, kids, we're going to talk about the first murder ever recorded in history.
Yeah.
So, another thing about this song.
So, if Adam and Eve had two boys, and then, I mean, that's a problem right there.
Yeah.
And then one of them killed the other. Well, that seems like that'd be the end of humans. That story
pretty
can't
much.
Be right.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know how that works out.
I would not have been good in Sunday school.
No.
Wait a minute.
So the other thing about this song, James Hetfield actually sings backup vocals.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course. I read something, I think it was a quote from John Christ saying that because of contract issues or something, they couldn't actually credit.
Oh yeah.
James Hetfield on the album.
Yeah. That sounds right.
Contract disputes.
Yeah.
They couldn't credit him.
So I'm sure he didn't care.
Yeah. I'm sure he didn't care either, but he is definitely singing backup vocals on the song. You have to listen closely and it's pretty low in the mix, I think, but you do hear him.
Turn it up. Listen to headphones.
You gotta turn her up.
Well, it's hard and heavy.
Got the hards and heavies.
Got the hards and heavies.
Now we're getting inside.
So we're on to the second song.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting how Twist of Cain ends on A, and then Not in This World starts on A.
Yeah, I always thought that was weird too.
I don't know if that's intentional, but just it's funny how they kind of could have gone as one song almost.
Yeah.
They kind of do. The end of Not of This World kind of sounds like the end of Twist of Cain too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and on Danzig 2, don't the first two songs bleed together?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was like a thing there.
Yeah, it must be a thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. On Danzig 4, the first two songs go together, right?
Yeah. Danzig 3, I don't think they do, though. Danzig 3 opens with Godless.
Yeah.
And it ends with that.
Sounds so weird.
Yeah, I know. It ends with that weird tink.
Yeah.
To claves.
Yeah. It's not some guy
music class
just hitting a bottle with a drumstick. That's what I thought it was.
Sure, it's claves, like, right? There's big metal, I mean, big wooden blocks, right?
And why the hell was the time off on that? That always bugged me.
Because it's even.
Why did you make sure that the time was off on that?
It is really weird.
No, there's a simple explanation.
What is it?
There's a zombie playing that part. And they're not good with rhythm.
Is that how you pictured it always? Some zombie in the back.
That's as good a story.
Except for the zombies in Thriller. Other than that, zombies have terrible rhythm.
Yeah, true. That's as good an explanation as any, I think.
Yeah, really.
I mean, because it is.
I'm right.
A horror element, right?
I know I'm right.
There's a zombie in the back playing this.
That zombie later probably was in Typo Negative.
Yes.
Are you a vampire?
If I was, what I tell you.
What I tell you.
Makes no sense.
I know. No. Yeah, you probably would.
I would.
What difference does it make? You're going to die anyway.
Tom Cruise told Brad Pitt, I think.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Oprah walked out.
Oh, God. What the fuck are we talking about?
We have diverted. Heavily.
We've gone off, yeah. Big time. Not of this world. That's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then we talked about Oprah. I don't know how that happened.
Oprah.
Not of this world is a good song, but it never stood out as, you know, one of my favorites on the album.
No,
it's fine.
It's weird that it's this soon on the album.
You think?
Yeah, it should be later on, I think. Other than the fact that it sort of blends, but it's...
Maybe that's why they just wanted to kind of have the continuation
maybe.
Of the first song.
It's just, yeah, probably. Because, I mean...
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's a good solo in the song.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's fine. There. So She Rides is not like those.
No.
No. It's definitely an interesting song. It's a great song.
Yeah. It's got a funky beat. I like to bug out to it.
That's right. I wrote this down. Again, the production.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys caught this, but the snare in the beginning sounds really weird. It's almost like a clap sound in it, like dun, 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 dun. It's almost like a video game.
Yeah,
like a Nintendo.
Yeah, it does.
A Nintendo snare drum.
Yeah,
it does sound like that.
It does. Yeah. It's weird.
It is weird. But I mean, it sounds like the snare sounds like that. The rest of the album, maybe it does, but I still notice it. But
well, we've mentioned the productions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just some weird stuff happening.
It's just weird
throughout the album.
But
there's weird stuff happening.
You know, most albums, you get a sound and you stick with it throughout the album for consistency. And you can tell where they were messing with stuff on different songs.
Mm, yeah, definitely.
Like the guitar sounds better on one song than another.
It's
weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a good song, though. John Christ said it was their first sex song.
Yeah, I remember I was not into the lyrics.
Yeah.
No.
Because
it wasn't metal.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
It was like glam metal.
Yeah. I mean, I was a junior in high school when this came out, and I was all about, you know, I wanted lyrics that were about hating everybody.
Kill everyone.
Well, because he's having sex and we're not. Fuck
I don't
want to
hear about that.
That's bullshit.
Yeah. I cannot relate, dude. Sorry. Junior
do that on your own time. Don't sing about it.
Yeah. I got like glasses and braces and bad skin. And I don't want to hear about this.
I don't think he'd write songs about that, though.
No, I know, but I'm saying, you know, I'm not going to write a song called She Rides in 1988. I can't relate.
Yeah, there was a bootleg that we got at one of our record conventions, and they start playing the song, and Glenn Danzig's like, "This is a song about fucking." Oh, yeah, right. What that's about. I thought she was riding a horse.
Oh, now I get what she rides. No,
okay.
No. Okay. It all makes sense.
Yeah. Thanks for the tip.
I would say songmeanings.com.
This is definitely one of the songs where you realize that they've got a blues side.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this isn't just a metal band or a hard rock band.
Yeah, I love the chorus in that. I like the, the melody. Mm-hmm. It's just a really good, strong song.
Yep.
Just couldn't get into the lyrics, but the song itself's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a chorus at the end with the you wrote it down here.
Oh yeah, they're with the kind of
the female backing vocal chorus. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, really nice.
It's very mm-hmm. melodic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really well done. Good.
And then that guitar part at the end where it's like a descending arpeggio.
Mm-hmm.
It fits perfectly. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good.
That's a good example of if you go from Samhain to this, it's just a world of difference.
Yes.
This is like a whole different world.
Yeah, it's like I was saying earlier, there's so many different elements that they put into this album that they had never done, or Glenn had never done before.
Yeah.
What's another example of where the production comes up short for the song, because I think produced better, those parts would have been more prominent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If there's ever a candidate for an album to be remastered or... Gosh, this is it.
Yeah. And that was a song that live they couldn't, I mean, that was a lot of studio stuff. So they live, they couldn't recreate that sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, they should do that. They're not going to do that. There's not a chance.
No.
No. At this point, no. Definitely not. But, like I said, it's very, it's bluesy. And I remember in an interview, Glenn saying, they were asking about his influences, and he said, Morrison, Elvis, and Roy Orbison. And you can kind of hear elements of all of that in that song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Definitely. Soul on Fire.
Soul on Fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I say that too fast? Soul on Fire.
Soul on Fire.
This is where I just realized he's saying Samhain.
Yeah.
But he's pronouncing it I guess it's like the Celtic way.
Yeah. I didn't know that either, until you pointed that out.
Either he's pronouncing it that way or he's just really lazy, and he says Samhain.
No, that's the pronunciation. If you look it up, you know, the real pronunciation of the word Samhain is Samhain.
Samhain, yeah. Yep.
I always thought he was saying. I didn't really look at the lyrics ever. I kind of did the lyrics along whenever.
Because I read the lyrics, I thought he was saying Samhain, but he was saying it kind of weird. I didn't really put two and two together. Then he was saying Samhain, but he's waiting on the Samhain of my soul.
Yeah.
Samhain on my soul.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Sounds like Samhain, I guess. I'm waiting on the soul of my soul.
Hey! Wanna bring your world down in fire. Is there a saxophone in that song?
I think so, yeah.
There is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I think it's a keyboard, but yeah.
But it's sampled saxophone.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
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 It's like the the baritone sax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's another, element of production that's kind of cool on this.
Yep.
Just sort of different.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. The only thing I don't like, again, is that it opens with a guitar sound that just is like, oh, there's that guitar sound again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know I'm really harping on that, but I wish the guitar sounded better on this album.
Yeah.
As a guitar player, it sometimes really bothers me. Am I Demon?
Next, Am I Demon?
Great song. But I remember when I saw this album and I was like, Am I Demon? I mean, that's obviously very similar to Am I Evil?
Right.
And I imagine that was intentional, but I don't know.
Well, the songs sound nothing alike.
No, I know. But
no.
title wise, I can see him being like, that's a great title. I'm going to sort of steal that.
He doesn't steal anything. What are you talking
about?
No. This was a big live song for them.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think. They always played it when we saw them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this was on Thrall, Demon's Wet Live, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so they liked playing this one.
Yeah. That's a great song. Really good riffs.
Yeah.
It's one of the more up-tempo songs for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, really aggressive.
Yeah, it's more in line with the metal side of
it. Yeah, yeah. The solos on the song are so good.
Yeah.
And Glenn's voice is amazing. Yeah. Just his screams in that song are so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is one where he kind of does some Shakira stuff, right?
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. Yeah, look that up on YouTube. I'm telling you. Shakira dancing.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, is there a YouTube thing for that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's the only reason I know about that.
Yeah.
I thought that's what you were referring to.
You didn't make the connection. Well, I like Shakira a little bit, so I noticed right
like
away.
Looking at her, or you like her music?
I mean, there's she's got some good songs.
This is a metal show. Stop it.
Hey. Maybe I like looking at her, too.
Nothing wrong with that.
Then Mother is next, which we talked about.
We did.
Yeah.
I mean, I did love that song from the beginning. I remember that I spoke about it earlier a little bit, but I do remember seeing the video.
Yeah.
Before it was banned by MTV, where they're like ripping apart chickens over this woman and blood everywhere in her stomach and stuff.
Yeah. They showed it twice, I think.
I think so. Yeah.
At 3 in the morning.
I never saw it on MTV. I had it on one of those video magazine shows. They were playing clips of it.
Yeah, he also released it on one of his home videos. Yeah. He did, I think, 2 or 3 home videos, and one of those he released it on there, too. Yeah. He is a weird dude. He makes some weird videos.
He had a thing for black and white videos.
Yeah, he did.
One thing we didn't talk about is, and Tim, maybe you can elaborate on this, but didn't we read something about how he wrote every single Danzig song, like musically?
I thought we read that, yeah.
Yeah, like he wrote all the guitar riffs.
Yeah.
Obviously, he wouldn't write the solos, but any guitar riff you hear in a Danzig song is pretty much written by Glenn Danzig.
Yeah, and I think even not necessarily the drums, but the tempos of the drums.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and I think he played drums on.
He did play drums in Samhain.
Yeah,
on a few songs.
Tell because they're incredible.
Yeah, it's like,
cool. God. Yeah.
The drums are a little off there. Ah, it must be a Glenn drum song.
Yeah.
Well, maybe he's playing the clave and how the guys
probably. Kill. I was going to say that earlier. I was going to say, well, it's in line with the drumming and the Samhain stuff.
Because,
yeah.
He had big, like, muscles. He couldn't.
Yeah.
It's probably harder for him to put his arms together in the right time.
Well, so going back to Mother, do you guys still dig that song?
Yeah,
I mean,
I do.
It comes on, if you hear it on the radio or whatever, are you still into it?
It's a little overplayed, but I don't dislike it. I'll still let it play.
Yeah.
It's not Sweet Child of Mine.
No, not even close. Or Rooster. That's the ultimate killed song. The song that I liked that I hate now. Right. Only because of the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still like the song. It's just it's interesting how it feels a little different when we hear it now to me anyway. It doesn't have the same effect that it once did.
Yeah, because it was part of that album for many years.
Mm-hmm.
It was part of a contained album, and that was one of the songs on that album. It wasn't something, you know, set aside.
It wasn't Danzig's hit.
Right, it was just part of
that
album.
Maybe that's what it is.
Another song on the album that was good.
Yeah, maybe it bugs me a little bit that's like the only song people know by Danzig.
Yeah, that's you hear in stadiums, you know, when you're like,
don't take that out on the song, man. It's not the song's fault.
Yeah. I can't help it.
Hey, you know what? It's those guys are still getting paid for it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So good for them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a pretty short song.
Yeah.
I think it's still a great song.
I mean, the fact that it was a hit and the lyrics being what they are is kind of surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the lyrics are there. So the lyrics on that are metal.
Yeah.
They're like, fuck you.
Yeah.
They're pretty badass. And the drumming at the end.
Oh, so
I love the drums.
So good.
Yeah. So what do you think it was about the release in 93 that got people to pay attention to it? Like, why did all of a sudden, 6 years later, it all of a sudden become popular?
It's just, well, you know, I think a big part was Metallica's album.
Yeah.
Had normalized metal.
Yeah, that could be.
That's a good point.
So people were more ready to hear stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they were also going against, well, I shouldn't say going against. You also had grunge.
Yeah.
Which was heavy.
Yeah.
So the landscape was more ripe for that.
Yeah.
That,
and this is like kind of what we said earlier, where this is bluesy rock. It's not necessarily metal.
True.
So it can kind of fit in.
Yeah. That song's more just power chords, I think.
Yeah.
Like it's pretty much 3 chords
which is
in different order throughout.
Why they play it in the stadiums, because it's got that stadium rock sound.
Yeah. I think the MTV thing had a lot to do with it, though, ultimately. I think it was played on one of those, like, rock block things every 45 minutes, you know, and all of a sudden.
Well, didn't
like,
they?
What is this?
Didn't they change the video too when the Thrall version came out? The supposed live version.
Yeah.
Was it just live footage?
Yeah, it was just live footage.
Yeah.
Which so that was another boost because they couldn't. They didn't have to play the old,
yeah,
scary chicken sacrifice, killing a chicken thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The video that has half of Glenn's face in a shadow.
Yeah.
He's just singing, standing there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So they got kind of lucky. I remember maybe it was planned. I don't know. I always thought that was weird that they just put the original with the crowd.
Yeah, like, that's just weird.
Just play the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
I know.
I don't know.
Just because it's a video, you don't have to have a live, like Bon Jovi's videos were all live, you know, on a stage, but they didn't put crowd noise in.
Yeah. I know.
I just thought the whole thing was weird. Just the fact that it was popular, it was just everything about it was just bizarre.
Yep.
Because all of us were just fans. We're like, what's happening right now?
Yeah. Yeah. It's too bad. What makes you wonder is if that song was popular in 88, because that's clearly when they peaked, like as far as songs go and great albums go, is like 88 to 90, was it 94, I guess.
Yeah, 94.
Those are their best albums.
Yeah.
So if he had released, you know, if Mother was popular in 88,
yeah,
how big would they have gotten? Yeah, like, if that song had the same amount of popularity in 88 as it did in 93, how big would they have gotten?
It's hard to say.
You know, because after that, they wrote Danzig 4, which was great.
Yeah.
But it kind of, that was it. Yeah. Fizzled out.
I don't think it would have affected them. I mean,
No?
No. I think that they had the place they would have with the mainstream.
Okay. Possession.
Oh, so good. Sarah McLachlan.
Which is a good song, but
God damn it, Joe. Stop talking about those female artists.
That's a good song though.
What are you, Axl Rose?
They're both good songs.
I know.
They are. This one's better.
This one's better.
This one is
Danzig
better.
Version.
This is
better.
Another example of a metal song in this album.
It is. This is my favorite song.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and, I think mine too.
It's
close. There's another one coming up that might be my favorite after going back and listening to these albums again. But
yeah,
this is another Hetfield song too.
Yeah.
And
that's one of those things where when you hear it, you can't unhear it. It's really
exactly.
Obvious.
And that's kind of surprising that we didn't notice that.
I know. I thought the same thing. Yeah. Yeah,
it's really not catch that.
It's really obvious.
Yeah,
that's that total 87 Hetfield growl.
Yep, and it's awesome.
Now I didn't learn the whole album on guitar, but I think this was the only one that was tuned down.
I don't think
drop D tuning. I think
you're right. Yeah, I don't remember. I don't know if I ever learned the entire album on guitar. To be honest with you. I learned a few songs, but I don't think I ever learned the entire album. But yeah, I think you're right, though. I think it is. Maybe
it's definitely the heaviest song, right?
Yeah. That riff is. I actually compared that riff to almost like a sped up version of Halloween, the song Halloween 2.
Hmm. Yeah.
Or, you know.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's similar.
It's different, but same.
Yeah.
Same.
Same.
There's some Latin. In the background.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Which is like ghost.
It is.
Well, the song starts with this weird
backwards scream.
Backwards. Yeah. And then it's got these weird demonic like growls going on.
Yeah. Really, this whole album.
This song fires me up.
I remember when I first got this album, it was very sort of unsettling in a good way.
Yeah.
You're like, this is like evil stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's what he's going for.
Yeah. You look back, you're like, what a bunch of bullshit.
I know, but at the time, you're like, man, this is like just...
Yeah, but when you're 16...
Oh, yeah, this is great.
Yeah, yeah, it was just sort of, in a good way, just kind of scary.
But yeah, and this is definitely one of the most... one of the more weirder songs on the album.
Yeah.
And probably the most different song of on the album from anything else on the album. Because there's just so much going on.
Yeah.
Those little female, almost robotic sounding...
Yeah.
Incubus.
This is creepy.
Women sing in the background. Yeah.
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 That's cool.
Anything else on Possession?
Well, yeah. No.
Just, no.
Just listen to that song if you're going to listen to one on this album.
Yeah, it's so good.
End of Time?
End of Time. Yeah. End so of time. Good. So good.
Yeah, the chorus on that is so good.
Yes. I'm not going to say so good.
Really?
Other than that one.
Hmm.
No, I just wanted to use a different term.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay. I thought you meant I'm not going to say it's so good. No.
Sorry. No, it's
fantastic.
Yeah.
Muy bien.
Yeah.
And I think I listened to this album probably 5 times in the last 2 weeks since we started talking about which one we're going to do next. And
it's better than I remember it being because I listened to it a lot too.
Yeah. And I think it was a couple of days ago I listened to it on headphones, which I hadn't. I was mostly listening to it in my car and just around the house. And I finally listened to it on headphones recently. And there's little nuances in that song that I guess I noticed, but I didn't. They come out way clearer when you listen to them on headphones. Yeah. Like little,
the,
it was like
the bell noises.
Yeah, yeah, like the sleigh bells.
Yeah,
and the little xylophone noises.
I don't think it's a xylophone, Eric. I think it's a glockenspiel. Xylophones are wooden. And glockenspiels are metal.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But it's probably all keyboard.
He's into the German stuff, so he much prefer a glockenspiel.
Yeah, but yeah, this song is another example of just sort of oddball things, mm-hmm. the background of songs on this album.
I love the harmonized guitar part at the end of the solo.
Yeah.
It's just kind of gives me chills. So good. The entire song is just fantastic.
It is.
I mean, start to finish. So good.
It's right there with the best album.
Yeah, I was saying earlier, you mentioned it's your Possession's probably your favorite, but this one is
close.
Pretty close. Yeah. I think this one might be my favorite at the moment. It's probably my favorite. Just really good. The Hunter.
Yeah.
This is an interesting one.
Yeah.
Because I remember listening to this album and this one was the one song on the album that
it's weird.
Yeah. I didn't really like it. And it, it felt a lot different from anything. Like it was like, I don't know about that one. So it's kind of weird. Like the lyrics were kind of weird and
yeah.
didn't really fit the rest of the album. And then it wasn't until we started researching these albums and Joe.
Well, before we were researching, I was under the impression like they copied Led Zeppelin again here because there's a Led Zeppelin song where the lyrics are like verbatim.
Oh, okay.
He's talking about the Hunter. And so it turns out, yeah, this is an old blues song.
This is really weird. I just pulled the liner notes out of the CD.
Mm-hmm.
The very last thing on the lyric sheet says, all songs, in all caps, all songs written by Glenn Danzig.
Oh.
No, it's not.
I know.
You're wrong. Now, he did change some of the lyrics in that song, but you can't claim writing credits for that, dude.
Yeah.
He didn't even change the name of the song.
No.
That's really weird that he did that.
Yeah.
All songs written by Glenn.
It's also not weird that he did
that.
Yeah. Yeah, knowing him.
Yeah.
It's funny how 2 episodes in a row we kind of talked about some assholes in metal.
Well, there's...
And
there's more to come.
There's more to come. Yeah,
yeah, there is.
At least there's a video of him getting knocked the hell out.
I guess we couldn't go this entire show without mentioning that once, right?
I've always liked this song.
Yeah.
Even though it's different.
It's good. It's just it's out of place on the album.
Yeah. So the original was by Booker T and the MGs.
Yeah, they did Green Onions.
Oh, did they? That one up.
Everybody knows that song. You're going to go, oh, that's them. Okay. That's a song.
That's a good remember you got there, Joe. I knew nothing about this song.
I was going to mention this later, but it kind of applies now. So I mentioned this earlier. I have a live recording from this tour. It was 4 songs. Remember Metal Shop, Eric? They played Metal Shop.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
Metal Shop oftentimes was followed up by a live metal show.
And yeah,
it was always like, you know, 4 or 5 songs live. And this night it was Danzig from this tour, mm-hmm. from the first album tour. And he said, here's one that didn't make it to the record. The song is called When Death Had No Name.
Oh.
And that became my favorite Danzig song, like for years, because, and I heard it, I was like, what the, this didn't make the album?
Yeah, how? How is that possible?
What? And the Hunter did?
Mistake.
I mean, that's, that song is ridiculous how good it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because they would play it live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you, I think that's the first time I heard it. Or maybe it was on a B-side.
Maybe. I don't know. But I mean,
I know it. I saw it live and it was like,
yeah.
What are you doing?
I mean, for years, my only recording was that, it was a cassette.
I remember that.
Off of the radio.
And there's even songs on Danzig 3. I'm like, what? Why didn't you put When Death Had No Name?
Yeah.
Like, that's better than every song.
It's like a top, I don't know, the top five, top three Danzig song. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I didn't realize it was that old. I thought that was like a B-side from Danzig 2 or 3.
It eventually made its way onto like that, but it was written in these sessions.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's such a good song.
And the ending of that song is just...
Oh.
Can you imagine if that song was on this album?
Like, note-wise, that's their heaviest song,
isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. And that would have been another situation where... or it could have been another situation where... That song is so heavy, but the guitar sounds kind of weird.
Yeah, if it was on this album, yeah.
It was on that album. That's true. It would have had that weird distortion again.
Yeah.
So maybe it's better than it wasn't, because when they finally did record it, it sounded really good.
Yeah.
Like, there is a recorded version out there now. So.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
I think it's on...
It's on the Lost Tracks. I know that.
Yeah, Lost. That's the album I was trying to think of.
It's on the Lost Tracks.
It's on that. But it's also a B-side somewhere.
Yeah.
It's
a B-side. Yeah, I knew it was on something else, though. I knew it was on the Lost Tracks, but Lost Tracks came out in, like, 2000s, I think.
Yeah.
Hey Joe, there's a 7-inch vinyl you can get on Discogs. Death Had No Name.
I'm not gonna.
It's Death Had When Death Had No Name, the demo version of Trouble and the demo version of Possession. Shit, now I'm curious.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't heard that song, I would recommend go and find it and play it right now. Pause this and go find it.
Yeah.
It was that's Trouble, and what was the other one?
A Possession, a demo version of Possession.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would want to hear it at least.
Actually, there's a 50-50 chance the demo version sounds better than the album.
More
that's
like
true.
A 70-30.
Yeah, really.
It's interesting. Why I didn't make the album, I don't know.
Yeah.
Stupid bands.
So the last song on the album is Evil Thing.
Good song.
Yeah, it was a good song.
I was going to say about this. In 1988, as I said, I was a junior in high school. The opening lines of that song I thought were so awesome. Because he says, I serve my perdition in this private hell. And I was like, oh, that's so awesome.
Like, that's high school, man.
Oh, yeah.
Singing to me.
Yeah, that's the best.
Every day I gotta come here.
Oh, my private hell.
Fuck education. Yeah. God damn it.
Yeah.
We were so dumb as teenagers. Jesus Christ.
Who isn't?
All teenagers are dumb as teenagers.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, I thought that was the best line. Like, oh, he understands, man.
Yeah. I thought this time listening to it, I didn't really put this together, but that opening riff or the opening part is a little bit War Pigs-y.
Kind of
a War Pigs ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's a hi-hat, but it is very similar to that whole opening bit of War Pigs. So.
Yeah.
Mm. Guess I'm having a little trouble with that one.
No? You don't see it?
Okay.
Just the structure of it. It's got this kind of long, drawn-out hi-hat tapping and then riff and then hi-hat, brr, and then riff. And
yeah.
That's.
Thank God they didn't give Danzig a percussion instrument to play.
Yeah, that would have been
all fucked up.
Well, so that's the entire album, unless there's more on... I said more on. Unless there's just more on the Evil Thing you wanted to talk about, anyone?
I don't have much to add to that one.
Yeah. It's a good song. It's a good album closer.
Start to finish... All the songs are good, in my opinion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Solid album.
If you haven't listened to it,
go listen to it. It's on every streaming service. And
yeah. If you think we're crazy, tell us. Yeah.
If you like it, you should buy it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Buy the vinyl.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And the cover's cool. It has the Danzig skull, and if you have
iconic.
Yeah. The CD the skull wraps around.
Who didn't have that T-shirt, right?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was another thing about them.
I mean, how many did you go through, Eric?
Like, oh, God. At least three. And I probably wore that shirt every day in high school.
I had a hoodie before hoodies were cool.
Yeah. Man. Well, I had a hat. I had everything, man.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I would say Danzig was probably your gateway into the Doors, right, Eric?
Yeah, I think so, actually. That's funny. Yeah, because Danzig mentioned Jim Morrison as a big influence, so I kind of went back and started listening to him a little bit. And then the movie, The Doors, came out, and I was already at that point kind of interested in that. The movie kind of put it over the top for me, and then got me way into The Doors.
It didn't hook you on Roy Orbison, though, huh?
Or Elvis, no.
He's fine.
Yeah.
They're both fine.
They're fine.
Yeah. So, why don't we move into some honorable mentions?
Right.
We've got two this episode. We're going to talk about the Guns N' Roses EP Lies and Dimension Hatros by Voivod.
Yeah.
Yeah, some different albums there. Some pretty different albums.
Absolutely.
So, do you want to do Guns N' Roses first?
Yeah, we can do that.
The popular one?
Yep. The big popular one with Patience on it.
That's right.
Yeah.
The song Patience. Yeah.
So it's a double album, but it's basically two EPs smashed into one album.
So it's like it's an EP, but it's not. I guess it's album length. But it's really, I always considered it an EP.
Yeah, it basically is. It's a re-release of an EP from 86 combined with a side B full of acoustic songs. So
I didn't know it was a live album until you told me.
Yeah. From 86, yes.
Right.
From 86,
what was that one?
Live Like a Suicide.
Live Like a Suicide. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got some good stuff. I mean, the second side that's the side that people listen to more often, I think, probably.
I'm sure.
I did.
That's the newer Guns N' Roses stuff.
Yeah.
When I went back to listen to this album, I didn't remember, other than Mama Ken, the Aerosmith cover, I didn't remember
the songs. It was all brand new to me.
It basically was, yeah.
Yeah.
Except Move to the City, I remembered from their a later live album that they put out.
Okay.
That was the only one I recognized. Well, actually, there's two that I recognized, but yeah. Side one, you know, it's there. You can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think. Boring. Are they all, they're not all covers, right? They're like old Axl Rose.
They're a couple of them are from Axl's old band, Hollywood Rose. That's Reckless Life and Move to the City are both Hollywood Rose songs.
Right.
And that song Nice Boys which is just a kind of generic rock song. It's kind of boring. But that's some Australian band. I don't remember.
I do. Rose Tattoo.
Rose Tattoo. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
everyone knows Rose Tattoo.
Sure.
Yeah.
They kicked ass, man.
Did you think he covered the song because the band had Rose in the name?
Probably.
Everything had to have Rose in it.
It wouldn't surprise me.
has Rose in it, man. That's cool.
Let's do that.
It's awesome.
All right. Yeah. Side one's boring.
Skip it. Side two.
Go on to side two.
Where the stuff happened.
That's where the meat is.
Yeah.
Patience is the opener on side two.
Yeah.
And, like I said earlier, I think it's still the best song on the album. I think it's, I don't know, it's one of their best songs, I think. I mean, I know it's a huge hit, but it's a really good song.
It is, yeah. I agree.
Yeah, it's fine.
I think it could have gone on Appetite. I mean, I think it's on par with the stuff on the album, I think.
I think so.
Yeah, except they didn't have anything acoustic, I don't believe. Mm-mm. That was all
pretty
heavy stuff on that album.
Yeah, I didn't do a lot of research to find out like when they wrote it and if it was, you know, considered for Appetite or anything like that. But it definitely sounds like it could have been on that album.
Yeah, this is it's a little bit off topic. We're talking about Appetite. I heard on XM Radio one of the DJs, he said that You Could Be Mine was supposed to go on Appetite for Destruction. Did you ever hear that?
Really? I think that, you know, a lot of their stuff, from what I remember, they wrote a ton of shit back in the day from like 86 to 88, and there were tons of old riffs and old demos. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't surprise me. I think I do remember hearing that though.
I still love that song. I think that if it was on Appetite,
yeah, it's a good song.
I mean, it would have been it's already a great album. It would have been greater.
Yeah, I think there may be some big box set out there that has like old demo versions of that song or something.
Probably
find it on YouTube.
Factoid about the album, Mike Klink produced the acoustic stuff.
Oh, okay, cool.
Mike Klink is the guy that produced Rust in Peace by Megadeth and who was fired by Metallica when he was producing Injustice for All.
And you don't, for possibly doing too good of a job.
Can they bring him back? Do it again.
Yeah, I wish I could be in that room when that decision was made and what they told the guy.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that one at some point.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
As you wear a Metallica shirt sitting there.
Right. No one can see that, dude.
I see Metallica stuff in the background.
This is a podcast.
Your whole room
not a video
is Metallica.
Cast. Shut up.
We're all in the same room.
Giving away
together.
The illusion of what I am.
We're sitting together. I can see what's in the room.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's right.
That's right.
So
anyway. There was a little interesting thing I found about this song before we move on from it real quick, that the guitarist from Tesla, Frank Hannon, claimed that Guns N' Roses ripped them off with the song Patience. He said that they had a song called Better Off Without You that was basically Patience note for note, but I listened to it recently and it's not. I don't know. I guess there's a chord progression that's similar and that's pretty much it. So yeah. if you feel like going to check out a Tesla song called Better Off Without You, making your own judgment, have at it.
I might do that someday.
Not right now.
No. So what'd they do next?
I Used to Love Her, right?
Is that next or is it You're Crazy?
No, it's I Used to Love Her.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the controversial songs on the album.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's not a good message at all.
No.
They're trying to be funny, but the lyrics are about killing your girlfriend and burying her in your backyard.
Yeah.
It literally says that in the song.
Yeah.
It's kind of tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
You can tell.
It just kind of falls flat.
It does not hold up.
Definitely. No. Yeah, I was about to say. Definitely does not hold up.
No. And if that were released today, oh boy.
Yeah, I know. You forget about these songs, though, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I hadn't listened to this album in so long that I started it. I'm like, oh, yeah, this song.
Yeah.
As a song, musically, there's nothing to it, really.
Right. About 3 minutes later, I'm like, oh, this song
very
is
repetitive.
Still going on.
Yeah.
Hey, a solo. Maybe they're going to end it here with a guitar solo. No, nope. Right back to that same chorus again.
Yeah.
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 So
let's move on from that one.
Yeah.
Boring.
It's boring. Boring. I don't like it. Boring.
Then it was You're Crazy, right?
Yeah. Then You're Crazy, which is
a redo of the same song on Appetite for Destruction.
Yeah, just the unplugged version.
Yep.
Not as good, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's different. It's slower, acoustic. I kind of like it better. But neither one is my favorite song. So
nah.
Right. No, it's not one of the highlights on Appetite anyway. So, nah. I mean, it's interesting. They could have picked so many different songs for that album to do acoustically. Maybe they did, but that's not one that jumps out at me would have, you know.
It's a simple song. So maybe that's why they went with that for the acoustic version. Just not much to it, really. So
Yeah. A lot of Axl improvisations in that song.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Move along.
This is the controversialist songs. One in a Million.
Yeah.
It made headlines in 1988 in Rolling Stone. It was on MTV News a lot.
Yeah.
But other news organizations too, not just MTV, like you saw stuff about this on like the nightly news or ABC.
Yeah, I can't remember, but I'm sure it
2020 was, or something like that. Yeah. This was a height of their success too.
Well,
you know?
So there were probably four. Well, there's two for sure words that are taboo, controversial, hate words that he uses in the song. But The whole premise of the song was, how do you put this? Like, he's a xenophobic, homophobic, racist guy getting off the bus in LA and thinks that everyone's out to screw him over who looks different than him. It's not a good look for Axl. It wasn't then, and it's still it's even worse now.
Yeah, it's really, really bad.
I'm ashamed that I even ever dug the song. You know, I tried to just, well, I didn't ever agree with the lyrics even then. I mean, I just, you just kind of like, okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I know.
The problem is the song is, it's probably the catchiest song on that side of the album, rather than Pages.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
But
I completely forgot about that, those two lyrics too. I mean, I remember after the first one, when he came in with the police and N-word part, it kind of caught me off guard. I was like, oh yeah, that's the song. Oh my gosh. Completely forgot about that. And then it just, from that point on, I just felt uncomfortable listening to it. I was like,
The immigrants line after that was like, oh, what is happening?
What are you doing? Yeah.
Immigrants and the anti-gay F word were together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just lumps them together.
What are you doing, dude?
And you know, before that I was thinking, because I had seen this album on like Discogs and a couple of people trying to sell it online. I'm like, that'd be kind of a cool album to own on vinyl. No, I'm not buying that album.
No.
I'm not spending, even though if it's been used, I don't care. I'm not spending a dime on that album.
Yeah, it's a deal breaker. If I used to love her, wasn't this one for sure.
Absolutely.
And after
I used to love her, was supposed to be tongue in cheek. This is just pure,
it's hateful
racism and hatred
and
there's no place for it.
No.
Well, there's a subset of people that there is a place for that. But,
for them.
Right.
I don't subscribe to it. So No. It killed the album for me. Like, we listened to it, you know, to kind of catch up on it. And I just, it's like, nah, let's get this out of here.
I'll listen to Patience off that album. That's pretty much all I'm going to do.
Yeah.
That's why it's an honorable mention.
Yeah.
It was newsworthy.
Yeah.
And
yeah, exactly. We put it on here because we knew it, you know, made headlines, and it was Guns N' Roses, and they were a huge band at the time.
Huge. I mean,
still are, but so you know, we wanted to at least discuss a little bit. But I don't know. I think we've talked enough about that. We've given enough airtime to Axl.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's changed. You don't hear much about him anymore, but
yeah.
It's you possible. Want to hope. Yeah, you'd hope that he'd maybe come out and be like, you know, that song.
I would hope he'd come out and say, don't listen to that.
Not a great
idea. That was terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But
just admit it.
Don't even bother.
I know it's 30 years later, but.
Yeah. Right, but there's still people discovering this music for the first time, you know?
Yeah, imagine you didn't know. You put this on, you're like, what?
Right. There's still people who are just now discovering Guns N' Roses and getting into their entire catalog of music. And
yeah.
They get to this album and this song and wow. Huh?
I can't even imagine hearing this for the first time today.
Now? Yeah, I know.
That would be,
Skip it. Skip that song.
Move along.
Let's talk about a much better album.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Voivod.
Dimitri Nedros. Voivod.
Those guys are immigrants.
True.
Yeah. Yeah, they speak French Canadian.
They're from French.
From a town up north, okay?
Okay. Yeah, Voivod. They, in 1988, were probably the most challenging band that I had run across.
Challenging, that's a good word.
Yeah, I liked. Okay, they played Tribal Convictions, the video for that song on MTV, Headbangers Ball. Starts off super heavy. I loved it, and then the main verse comes in, and I did not like it.
Yeah,
I didn't understand it.
Yeah, I remember watching that video too, and it was first of all, it's a weird video.
Yeah,
and then you know, like you said, it comes in with this awesome drum part, and then Snake, the singer, starts.
He's like
singing.
You're
like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah, there's that? This weird time signature, and he's singing all weird, and everything is just off the wall weird. And in '88 at 16 years old, it was not speaking my language.
No.
So
they're They are very unconventional for a metal band. I mean,
oh yeah.
If you were into thrash metal back then, you were exposed to time changes and weird,
yeah.
weirder stuff. But they were mm-hmm. not heavy all the time. In fact, I would say they weren't heavy that much at all. They were aggressive and fast.
Yeah,
but they used chords you weren't used to hearing.
Yeah. Yeah, to say the least.
And their time changes were super different. Like, I don't know if that's a good description.
I don't even know how they wrote that or remembered it.
Yeah, a lot of bands you hear back then and immediately like, yes, I love this band. They're great.
Yeah.
Not Voivod. No. You got to get used to those guys.
Right. Yeah. And it took me a good couple of years to finally figure it out.
Yeah.
And I love it now, but man, I wanted to like it then and I just couldn't as hard as I tried.
Yeah, well, I think you got into them sooner than I did, even when you did get into them, because I was like, I went back and listened to this album when we were doing the research for this episode, and I just didn't remember a lot of it. Yeah. I mean, I remember the quote-unquote hits, like the bigger songs that, that we heard a lot of on Headbangers Ball, like Tribal Convictions and Psychic Vacuum, but I didn't remember a lot of it. And actually, it's funny, because I listened to it about probably three times, and I did like it more the last time I listened to it. So it kind of goes with what we were saying earlier. It just takes some getting used to.
Yeah, I remember seeing on a one of those video magazines, Hard and Heavy, I think, or Metalhead. And they played clips from those videos. And it wasn't that I didn't like them, but it was kind of like I want to take a wait and see approach to this. Like, I can't say I don't like it, but it's not my thing. And it took me forever. Like, it wasn't until probably 93. Is that when Outer Limits came out? Then I kind of got into them and started looking backwards, but at their catalog. Mm-hmm. But they are a band that I like more and more as I get older. There's so much to dig into there, you know.
Yeah. It takes there's a lot to digest, so to speak.
And
like Tim was saying earlier, their riffs are not conventional. And
no.
Like, and this album, I forgot how good it was, because I listened to it several times, and I just bought the vinyl. It's like I need more of this album.
it's like a new album for you.
Kind of is. It's
yeah,
yeah. Just they have their own weird universe.
Yeah.
Very different bands. They're very good.
And each album, from the first album up until Nothing Face, was a concept album about their mascot.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And wasn't the mascot Voivod?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you get a physical album from them, I mean, the artwork on all their albums is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know that until, Tim, you got the vinyl for Christmas and you showed me and you said, you know, that's Voivod.
Yeah.
I was like, what's Voivod? Like that character is Voivod. I'm like, what?
Yeah, on the cover. That's
weird,
Voivod.
Like, skull.
He's Voivod.
Metal skull.
35 years later, I'm just finding this out.
Yeah.
They're good, though.
I mean, this album, Dimension Hatros, is very good, but they have a lot of really good albums.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I see, that's for me, this album doesn't compare to Nothing Face or Outer Limits. Or I know you guys probably think I'm crazy, but I think I even like Angel Rat better than
Skull. You like which one?
Yeah, I mean
Angel Rat.
Yeah. Angel Rat, yeah. Yeah, it's different, but I do enjoy that album quite a bit too. Because I went back and I should have listened to Killing Technology and then this, but I didn't. I'll have to go back and listen to Killing Technology. But I really, from Nothing Face till, you know, that 89 to 93 period is just, for me, is when they really hit their stride and they were amazing.
Yeah, there's kind of a break after Nothing Face and into the Angel Rat and Outer Limits phase where it's a kind of a different Voivod. Yeah.
And then it gets really accessible. Weird because the singer left and they sound different for a while, but I mean, they're still around. The singer came back eventually. They've been through some different rough times since then, but this is a band that, you know, people listening to this, they may not know Voivod.
That's true.
True.
They're absolutely worth checking out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like we said, they're, you know, don't give up on them after like five songs, because it, yeah. you gotta stick it out and listen over and over before you start really getting it. But
what would the gateway be? Maybe people seem to like the Pink Floyd cover.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Astronomy to that first.
Yeah.
That's Nothing Face could be a good introductory album.
Like I said, for me, it was The Outer Limits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the most accessible.
Yeah.
The most sort of mainstream. Yeah.
Even though it's got a 17-minute song on the album.
Yeah.
The others are not like that. They're pretty straightforward rock. Yeah. But still Voivod.
Yeah.
And the production on that album is great.
On The Outer Limits. It's almost perfect.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. They did go through some hard times. Their guitar player, Piggy, died of cancer in 2005. And a lot of people thought they were going to call it quit to that point. But, you know, kind of Jason Newsted actually kind of helped to revive them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before that. Yeah.
Actually, he was in the band before that, wasn't he? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He was. He joined in 2003.
Right after he left Metallica, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he joined in 2001 and the first album with him came out in 2003.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is a good album. Yeah.
It is, but we're not talking about that album.
Right. Dimension Hatros.
So we are on social media. You can check us out there. We got a Facebook page, facebook.com/somewhereintimepodcast. We're on Twitter. You can search for us. It's just Somewhere in Time Podcast, but the Twitter handle is SIT Music Podcast, and instagram.com/somewhereintimepodcast. I'm trying to be a little more active on that site. Maybe we'll put up some polls or something for you guys to vote on and stuff like that.
That'd be cool.
What are we going to vote on?
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't decided yet. I just said maybe. There's no commitment for me yet.
Just get people involved.
Yeah.
In some way or another.
No.
What's better, the legacy or the new order?
Oh, gosh. We already had that conversation. Keith.
It's the new order. Let's vote. Let's vote now.
I know. There's no...
The new order.
Oh, it's unanimous. We all voted new order. Hey, how about
Keith
that?
Should have voted if you wanted to be a part of that.
Yeah, really. Come on, Keith. Get off your ass.
Yeah. If you don't vote, you have no one to blame but yourself.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
If you're still listening, thanks. If you made
you're
it this
still
far.
Here.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Thanks for sticking through the Axl stuff.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
If you didn't tune out when you heard Guns N' Roses, thanks.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Energy. Energy, aggression, power.
To sum it up, it's a
vulgar display of power.
Metal and certain other forms of rock give teenagers something to believe in that they get no place else.
The human element of making music is what's most important. Singing into a microphone and learning to play an instrument, that's the most important thing.
Sue B. Honey makes them sing like this!